It's the new Congress, full of X-chromosomes, socialists, and their commandante, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising, with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is Scott Cosenza and your only host for a change for this 101st edition of The Uprising. They thought that by making me host solo, I could be prevented from interrupting anyone. So we'll see about that. I think I can probably interrupt myself. We're going to talk shutdown. We'll talk about the new 116th Congress that was sworn in. Everybody's favorite, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We'll talk about what makes this new Congress so very special. Hint, hint, it is an even deeper dive into identity politics. We'll also talk a little about the presidential race and how the identity politics is infecting that storyline as well. Okay, let's learn from the NPR newsroom. What makes this new Congress so very special?
The 116th Congress made history Thursday, swearing in the most diverse group of lawmakers ever.
Oh, the most diverse group in history to be congresspersons. Well, that must mean they are libertarians present and Green Party members, and within those contexts, sort of all across the political spectrum. That's who we've got coming in to represent us in this great republic.
More than 100 women, including the first two Native American women, the first two Latino women from Texas, the first two Muslim women, the first ever African American women Congress members from Connecticut and Massachusetts were sworn in, as was Colorado's first ever African American member of Congress.
Just about every news report I saw led with that. Before they got to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they talked about nothing other than the sex and race makeup, and religious makeup, because of the Muslim, the couple of Muslim women as well, of these new congresspersons. As if that is literally the most important thing that we can gather from them, is this diversity thing. Here's a prediction for you. These wonderfully diverse group of people who include different races and sexes will be every bit as craven, corrupt, and self-dealing as the Caucasoidal male members of Congress. They will be the same disappointment, especially when the media, the legacy media, focus on their identity politics rather than policies that may work or need changing. It's the identity politics show, and it accrues to the benefit of one party and one party only, the Democrats. And I think that's why so many mainstream media organizations engage in it. Well, House Democrats wasted no time in getting the impeachment show, or showdown, started. A representative from a Los Angeles area called Brad Sherman, Democrat, California's 30th Congressional District, introduced House Resolution 13, impeaching Donald John Trump, President of the United States, for high crimes and misdemeanors. So far, only one co-sponsor, Al Green, not the good one, the singer, but the congressman, has signed on. And this bill of impeachment has one article. It's basically alleging that Donald Trump, and I'll quote now from it, has prevented, obstructed, and impeded the administration of justice during a federal investigation. And it goes on to discuss the investigation regarding the former National Security Advisor, General Michael Flynn, and Trump basically putting brakes on or trying to stop that investigation. I think the best person who's discussed this has been Alan Dershowitz, and as he'll tell you, the president cannot commit an obstruction of justice of this type of investigation because the very decision to engage in that investigation is an executive-level decision. It's a political decision made by the executive, and guess who's in charge of the executive branch of government? Well, you guessed it. It's the President of the United States, Donald John Trump. I guess that argument's not terribly compelling to so many of the new Congress because they can just pick a new impeachable thing out of the air. It's like, how do I hate thee? Let me count the ways. One of the new freshman congresswomen, the proud Muslima Rashida Tlaib, who identifies as a socialist and a Palestinian, listed her reasons for impeachable offenses, including obstruction of justice, the emoluments clause, the pardon power abuse, directing or seeking law enforcement to prosecute political adversaries for improper purposes, and undermining equal protection, ordering the cruel and unconstitutional imprisonment of children and their families at the southern border, and, of course, conspiring to illegally influence the 2016 election. Congresswoman Tlaib made early headlines for calling the president an MF-er and said, we're going to impeach him on the night of her inauguration. Now, I wouldn't care if she said vulgar language if she were libertarian, so I certainly don't care about it because she is a socialist. But I think it's important to remember that one of the reasons why we were told Donald Trump couldn't be president of the United States was because of his vulgar language. And Donald Trump's vulgar language, you'll recall, was captured in a 2005 recording on a television set and was only discovered after NBC News scoured their archives of Trump audio recordings recorded for their entertainment purposes to find any outtakes that could be damaging. And then the NBC actually held that story and didn't release it because they thought the news executives thought it would be not damaging enough. So they wanted to wait till further on in the election process before they released it. And somebody who knew about it leaked it to the Washington Post, who then contacted NBC News, and then they rushed the release out. And we can juxtapose that with Ms. Congresspersons Rashida Tlaib's outburst calling Donald Trump an MF-er and saying that we're going to impeach him at a public bar on the night of her inauguration. We don't seem to see the same standard for Ms. Tlaib. In any case, I'm happy to have her vulgar language if her governance was sound. The problem that presents itself is that it seems like it's not likely to be. Here she is on NPR.
What do you say to those who say, why not wait for the Mueller investigation to conclude and come out with its findings before moving to try to attempt to impeach the president?
Yeah, look, the Constitution demands me as a member of Congress to hold him accountable. This is beyond the Mueller investigation. I don't think American people understand even the decision not to open up government. Is it because it's the best interest of the American people, or is it because it has something to do with his corporations and his businesses? Because he hasn't, as the president of the United States, he has not divested in all of his companies and corporation here or abroad. And so a lot of the decisions being made out of the White House, out of the President of the United States office, could be made because it's a for-profit, because it's in the best interest of his companies and in the bottom line, not the best interest of the American people.
If you consider the breadth of what she just said there, it's pretty breathtaking. The first thing that she references is even the decision that she says to not open the government. So what that means is, by Trump refusing to agree to the spending terms that the Congress is willing to put up, that executive decision itself deserves scrutiny in the Congress for potential impeachment proceedings. You think about what that means, what the mechanics of that would be. It would be great to get some of these Democrat senators who are clearly running for president, like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, to weigh in on how much access the Congress should have to presidential decision-making in all its forms. I mean, that's, of course, if you're interested in consistency, which I doubt that they are, but we could ask Elizabeth Warren. She just, she's one of the few who has officially thrown her hat into the ring with her exploratory committee. This is what the legacy media had to say about her candidacy.
Gender politics. No sooner had Elizabeth Warren all but announced for president.
Hello, Sioux City!
Then we began to see stories like this, somehow suggesting Warren, like Hillary Clinton, is too unlikable to win. The debate over different treatment women get on the presidential campaign trail.
Oh, sorry. We are not going to ever be getting away from the gender and identity politics, it looks like. The different treatment that women get. Now, do you recall the treatment that Donald Trump got about the jokes about his hair, his skin color, his weight, his hand size, and the implications thereof regarding his manhood? He was savaged by the mainstream press for these things. And it's generally a hands-off policy on these things for people who are pro-state politicians, often Democrats. Well, if there weren't double standards, they'd have no standards at all. Okay, let's talk about everyone's favorite Democrat, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the it girl of the new Congress, and also a Socialist Party member. The Chuck Todd and mainstream media meme about whether chatter about whether Elizabeth Warren is likable or unlikable. How come that discussion never occurs with politicians that are so obviously likable? Is it perhaps that it's a legitimate discussion when people are examining who might be able to win the presidency, their likability factor? I mean, hey, I would prefer that we focused solely on policy, but the idea that likability is somehow sexist or that men don't have to worry about being likable is ridiculous. And the reason why that question or debate is applicable to Elizabeth Warren and not to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is because Elizabeth Warren is not very likable. I mean, even people who don't like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's politics, and count me at the front of that line, she scares the hell out of me. She's as cute as a button. You want to put her in your pocket and take her right home. So it's not about a sexist thing with Elizabeth Warren. It's about she's off-putting in so many ways, and that's likely to negatively affect her presidential aspirations. The reason why we must not like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, likable though she is quite simply that she wishes to turn our country into Venezuela. Now, I don't mean that she wishes for the outcome that we're all starving in the streets and begging for medicine or a way out like they are presently in Venezuela as a result of the socialist programs that she wishes to introduce, but that she wishes to introduce programs that will naturally lead to that result. Of course, it's much more convenient to call somebody a sexist or a racist than it is to refute or dispute the serious concerns they have about the policies you wish to enact. What might those be? Here she is on 60 Minutes.
Ocasio-Cortez told us she's determined to keep fighting for what's being called a Green New Deal, a highly ambitious, some would say unrealistic proposal that would convert the entire U.S. economy to renewable sources of energy in just 12 years, while guaranteeing every American a job at a fair wage.
Some would say that it's an unrealistic proposal. Who are the serious people who think that it's a realistic proposal that in 12 years in the United States of America, every single car that's currently on the road that's not a Tesla would be replaced by an electric car, that every single furnace in the United States that is natural gas burning is replaced, along with all the dryers and other appliances that use fossil fuels, not to mention every aircraft that's flying today that you can book a ticket on is powered by fossil fuel. All the stuff that we buy and use, the cargo that gets shipped around this world, well, guess what? That is delivered via a device that uses fossil fuel, whether it's a ship in the ocean, a boxcar attached to a train, or a tractor-trailer truckload, or often all three at some point in its journey to get to you, including perhaps the UPS truck. All that's going to go completely away? How is that possible? Well, there's one way that it's possible, is if you give the government extraordinary control to crush the independent actions of others and make them all forcibly go into one direction. Maybe that's how you could do it. You definitely can't do it in a free society where people are allowed to make their own decisions. because they're not going to decide to throw away their cars that are still working perfectly in favor of your vision of a green planet. She is very dangerous, though. She's dangerous because she's able to sort of effectively pivot and turn from any cornering of facts and logic that may be used against her in a sort of Trumpian-like way of deflecting a direct attack with a non sequitur that somehow seems to work, especially for her own base.
You're talking about zero carbon emissions, no use of fossil fuels within 12 years?
That is the goal. It's ambitious. And
how is that possible? You're talking about everybody having to drive an electric car?
It's going to require a lot of rapid change that we don't even conceive as possible right now. What is the problem with trying to push our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible?
Perfectly stated, right? What's the problem with pushing our technological capacities to the furthest extent possible? Who could object to something like that? Some fabulous technologist like Elon Musk could say something like that. Of course, that's one way to say it. Another way is probably would get her fewer converts or adherents, which is what's wrong with putting a gun to the head of every American and saying you have to buy a new car within the next few years or else you go to prison. Or if you use your current car, you're going to be fined massively. And if you don't pay the fine, you're going to have to go to prison. Because those are the mechanics by which government works. It's not about suggesting to people that it would be beneficial to the environment or perhaps their own long-term financial interests to get a electric car. But what Ocasio-Cortez proposes is that this is done by government action, and the only way that government can act in this fashion is to take people's cars or punish them for keeping them. I'm sure that when Mrs. Ocasio-Cortez and the rest of the Congress and the government has the capacity to ban or allow almost any device that uses energy, they'll only use that power for good. One of the ever popular memes of the day is that Donald Trump is a racist. In addition to being a unsworn agent of the KGB, apparently he had also been secretly a grand dragon of the KKK all these years, in spite of the fact that throughout all these investigations and the vast amount of money that would accrue to anybody who could come forward with a credible instance of Trump uttering a racial epithet or other proof that he was somehow a racist, none exists. But we know he's a racist how?
You don't talk about President Trump very much.
No.
Why?
No. Because I think he's a symptom of a problem.
What do you mean?
The president certainly didn't invent racism, but he's certainly given a voice to it and expanded it and created a platform for those things.
Do you believe President Trump is a racist?
Yeah. No question.
How can you say that?
When you look at the words that he uses, which are historic dog whistles of white supremacy.
When she says no question, she's shaking her head like, are you crazy to even ask that question? Of course this is the truth. Now, the funniest response I heard for this historic dog whistle comment comes from comedian Dave Smith, host of the Part of the Problem podcast, which I recommend. And he had this great observation, which was, historically, there was no need for a dog whistle for a racist to express their racist views. If you're a slave owner in the United States, or you're arguing for Jim Crow, those people just made their points that blacks or minorities were less than others. They didn't have some complicated secret dog whistle way of communicating. So this idea that there's some dog whistle thing is just a way for them to demonstrate that there's racism without actually having to proving that there's racism. So if you say there's a dog whistle, there's no defense against that. You're giving out secret racist code language. Well, a fair thing would be to say, well, where's this list of all this secret racist code language so that I can maybe steer clear from it? Well, they can't produce that list because it's just anything that they think can possibly be successfully tarnished with the word racist attached to it, which is designed to shut down debate and shut down discussion, and to use the language of the left to otherize the target of it. If you can brandish somebody successfully as a racist, of course, then you don't have to contend with any of their ideas. I thought there was an interesting exchange with Senator Lindsey Graham on, I think it was on CBS's Face the Nation, where he basically says that the negotiations for the government shutdown are being affected by this calls of Trump of being racist over it, and basically throws down the gauntlet that says, you know, they're not going to put up with this kind of ongoing name calling.
I think we'll have offers on the table when we find somebody that's not crazy to deal with. We're not going to put any offers on the table as long as people in charge of these negotiations accuse all of us who want a wall of being a racist and see our Border Patrol agents as gassing children. Until you can get that crowd put to the sidelines, I don't see anything happening.
Graham was talking about how Dick Durbin was the guest previous to him on the program, and he said that, you know, if you bring Dick Durbins to the table, basically we can get a deal done. But if you bring these other sorts who keep up with the name calling, then it's a lot harder to negotiate in good faith with them. And then later on in the program, the self-same program, that is Face the Nation, we have Democrat Representative Max Rose, another freshman member of Congress, in discussing the commonality of the kind of insurgent progressive campaigns of the recent congressional election, comparing them similarly to Donald Trump's insurgent presidential campaign. Well, he just couldn't offer up that comparison without an important caveat.
2016 and 2018 were not that different. It's just different political parties won. If you think about what Donald Trump ran on, okay, if you put some of the racist stuff aside for a moment, which is difficult, I know, but he spoke about infrastructure, he spoke about drug costs, he wanted to protect Medicare and Social Security, draining the swamp. We ran on many of those same things.
If you can put the racist stuff aside, never identifying with specificity, of course, what the racist stuff is, it's all nebulous, dog whistle talking that we can't really nail down on. But what we know is that to be a racist is to be perhaps the most disgusting of human beings that's ever existed, worse than a murderer, perhaps, is to be a racist. Donald Trump is one, and the evidence thereof is so prevalent it never need be identified specifically, but people of right minds just know how he was racist in the campaign, especially. Those allegations of racism against Trump said loud enough and long enough from multiple points of broadcast are surely to land home and affect a lot of people in terms of their view of the president. So I think Lindsey Graham's onto something for demanding a sort of, I don't know if civility is the right word, but at least not abject ad hominem name calling on behalf, on the part of people who are expected to be your fair dealing partners in democracy, like we would hope our elected representatives would be. We will not be successful as a society going forward if we do so on the basis that gender and sexual identity and race or color should control one's political beliefs. And sadly, the legacy media are doing everything to sort of confirm those biases that are tribal and emotional and everything against the Enlightenment values that these people all profess to back. But yet when the rubber meets the road, that's not what they're doing. Here is Donna Edwards on Meet the Press. She's a black woman who is just recently out of Congress, ran unsuccessfully for the Senate in Maryland. But this is what she has to say about identity politics.
I don't think the era of identity politics is over because for a lot of women, for people of color who are the base of the Democratic Party, our identity is our politics.
They get such strength from those identity politics. That's the part that's left unsaid. If I can position myself as the pro-woman candidate and identity politics is in play, then all the women are going to vote for me because they identify as women, and I'm the person who's advancing their interests. It is quite simply tribalism, and it would be rejected by these media outlets and these candidates, too, if it were presented in any other way. But because it benefits their attempts to gain and maintain political power, it's not criticized in that fashion. And in fact, any criticism of it is seen as simply evidence of racism itself. A perfect loop. Tocqueville said we get the government we deserve. Let's hope he's wrong. All right, thanks so much for joining us. This has been The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Please visit us at LibertyNation.com and also check out our YouTube channel. And please like, comment, and subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It'll really help us out. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.